It was the sort of house that you never seemed to come to an end of, and it was full of unexpected places. The first few doors they tried led only into spare bedrooms, as everyone had expected they would, but soon they came to a very long room, full of pictures, and there they found a suit of armor. And after that was a room all hung with green with a harp in one corner. And then came three steps down and five steps up, and then kind of a little upstairs hall and a door that led out onto a balcony, and then a whole series of rooms that led into each other and were lined with books, most of them very old books, and some bigger than a Bible in a church. And shortly after that, they looked into a room that was quite empty, except for one big wardrobe, the sort that has a looking glass in the door. There was nothing else in the room at all except the dead blue bottle in the windowsill. "Nothing here," said Peter, and they all trooped out again, all except Lucy. She stayed behind because she thought it would be worthwhile trying the door of the wardrobe, even though she felt almost sure it would be locked. To her surprise, it opened quite easily, and two mothballs dropped out. Looking into the inside, she saw several coats hanging up, mostly long fur coats. There was nothing Lucy liked so much as the smell and feel of fur. She immediately stepped into the wardrobe and got in among the coats and rubbed her face against them, leaving the door open, of course, because she knew that it was a very foolish thing to shut oneself into any wardrobe. Soon she went further in and found that there was a second row of coats hanging up behind the first one. It was almost quite dark in there, and she kept her arm stretched out in front of her so as not to bump her face into the back of the wardrobe. She took a step further in, then two or three steps, always expecting to feel woodwork against the tips of her fingers, but she could not feel it. "This must be a simply enormous wardrobe," thought Lucy, going still further in and pushing the soft folds of the coats aside to make room for her. Then she noticed that there was something crunching under her feet. "I wonder, is that more mothballs?" she thought, stooping down to feel with her hands. But instead of feeling the hard, smooth wood of the floor of the wardrobe, she felt something soft and powdery and extremely cold. "This is very queer," she said, and went on a step or two further. Next moment, she found that she was rubbing against her face and hands was no longer soft fur, but something hard and rough and even prickly. "Why, it is just like branches of trees," exclaimed Lucy. And then she saw that there was a light ahead of her, not a few inches away where the back of the wardrobe ought to have been, but a long way off. Something cold and soft was falling on her. A moment later, she found that she was standing in the middle of a wood at nighttime, with snow under her feet and snowflakes falling through the air. Thus begins the adventures of Lucy and later the other Pevensey children as they travel to Narnia to meet Aslan, help defeat the White Witch who has enslaved the land so that it is winter but never Christmas. I really am a firm believer in stories, primarily books, being portals to other worlds, particularly fantastical and speculative worlds, where we're not bound by the rules of the world we live in, but are free to sort of roam at our own thoughts and ponderings. We can go to worlds of magic, adventure, or robots and spaceships, zooming through the universe. It's fun even watching my kids get into these types of stories as well. Whether it's in a magic treehouse, or tales of dragons, superheroes, or little critters, their eyes are opened to the world around them, so they begin to see all that is both wonderful and wrong. On this day, we encounter our own portal, the empty tomb. Our gathering here today most surely is a remembrance of that first Easter, that this particular man, Jesus of Nazareth, having been arrested, tortured, and crucified by a collusion of powers, did in fact rise from the dead. But this is not a mere anniversary celebration. The story of the empty tomb related to us throughout the centuries, beginning with those women traveling to that tomb to prepare a body for burial, very normal task for, in that particular time and place, is not the typical everyday story after all. What was expected did not come to pass. All of the should-have-beens are thrown out for a story that is completely out of the ordinary. Surprising. The story of the empty tomb proclaims not just a new experience, but a wholly different world. A holy reality. In the resurrection of Jesus, a new age is now here. One that is no longer theoretical nor fantastical. Not one that remains proclaimed to be coming, but is upon us here and now at this portal. This new world is not just in our minds as some psychic reality, nor in our hearts as some spiritual reality. This new world is about flesh and bone. A new bodily reality brought about by this resurrection. What kind of reality will it be? What new age is coming about through this portal? The portal itself reminds us of the important elements. First, we must wrestle with the fact that it is a tomb. Jesus did not merely sidestep death in order to avoid suffering. Jesus doesn't place himself in some guru's trance which gives the mere appearance of death. The consistent witness given is that he died. The consistent witness of the Gospels is in fact that he proclaims he will die. Jesus' words and teachings continue to point out that this death, as brutal and as gruesome as it was, in fact, had a purpose. Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, the one sent into the world to reconcile a broken world with God. This tomb is a stark reminder to us that Jesus dies for our sake. He is utterly obedient and faithful to the Father's plan to reconcile us to him. Jesus encounters death as the culmination of our rejection of God, our refusal of God's intention. God creates and gives life. We choose less. Rather than worship God, we want to be worshipped ourselves. The cross is the ultimate encounter as humans put Christ to death, thereby at least in their minds removing some of the competition for God. But Christ remains faithful, obedient to the Father's will, even to the point of death, where he feels ultimately abandoned by God. Now think about that. Christ remains so faithful, so obedient to the Father's plan to reconcile God and humanity, that he will face the reality of being utterly abandoned by the one to whom he's faithful. His cry on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Is not just Jesus showing off his biblical knowledge, but a true cry of dereliction. In dying for our sake, Jesus refuses to change course, to break unity with the Father's will. And as such, this tomb is now empty. This event is not simply a spiritual, experiential, or even metaphorical happening, but something taking place in this world and with Jesus' body in some way that involves our spirits, but our bodies as well. If Jesus' body remains in the tomb, then there is no event like that taking place. No new world but business as usual. But this cannot be the same old experience of death. When the women arrive, there is no body to prepare. Nothing on which to spread the spices. Something unexpected and unimagined has happened. This raising of Jesus by the Father is the vindication of Jesus' faithfulness. In the midst of looking completely and utterly forsaken and cursed, Jesus is now exalted by the Father. His resurrection now points to his earlier teachings and miracles and parables and testings as being vindicated. Without being raised from the dead, we might find some worth in Jesus' death, but it would lack the definitive stamp of approval. God the Father now exalts him as Lord. His victory over death now points to the new age that Jesus has been proclaiming. Jesus' resurrection validates and kickstarts the coming reign of God. The reign of God attested to by the prophets. The reign taught about in Jesus' parables. The resurrection shows forth the new age that is in line with God's promises from the time of Abraham and Moses through David and the prophets. Jesus being raised from the dead brings to fulfillment all the promises of this new age. The world, a place of suffering and death and violence and hatred, prejudice and pride, sin that divides us from each other and from God, will be no longer. This reign, this kingdom, will be a reign of peace. True peace, without any hostility between God and humans and creation. There will be no more suffering, no more hunger, no more poverty, no more grief, no more death. The dead themselves will be raised. This portal, this empty tomb brings about a new mode of existence that, while promised, was unattainable without Jesus. And for all the talk of the tomb being a portal, a doorway to a new world, a new age, a new kingdom, we have to face a harsh reality. Even with Christ's resurrection, we can't enter it. In fact, the empty tomb is less a portal for us to enter into and more for the reign of God to enter into our world. The reign of God comes continuing to defeat the powers of sin and death wherever they rise up. We are called to put sin to death daily so that we may rise in newness of life here and now, not just in some future. This new age breaks into the world through the empty tomb to end the age of death and sin and brokenness. And as this new age breaks in through the empty tomb, we need not be with the witnesses of the resurrection like Peter, gazing in there, wondering where he shall be. Jesus, now the exalted Lord over all creation, is freed, so he can now be present to us in his resurrected form, most intimately in the meal that he began the night he was betrayed. He pours out his life for our sake on the cross. And now, being freed from the power of death, he continues to pour out his life for our sake. He is now free to meet us at the table, where he may continue declaring forgiveness, urging us on in our mission to be sent out in the world where we may likewise live a life poured out for others. A life where we need not fear dying for pouring our life out. For that death has been vanquished. United with him in the waters of baptism, we may rest assured that our union with him extends past death, and as he was raised, we too shall be raised. And now we take up the role of the apostles, testifying to the death of Jesus, witnessing to his continued resurrected power in our lives. A new and incredible age is upon us. The gate is open and may not be closed, for Christ has burst wide open the portal, and a new world awaits us. Thanks be to God. Amen.